All right, good afternoon or morning on the West Coast, and hi, welcome to a special bonus edition of the FTN Shots and Tenier NFL Podcast for Thursday, June 11th, 2026. I am Aaron Schatz. You know me as the DVOA guy from FTN. He is Mike Tenier. You know him from his ghost.
My newsletter. Just call
my newsletter, the yes. Two Deep Zone. And from this podcast, and we're here to talk about news of the offseason. We are going to count down what we think are the top 10 moves, signings, and trades of the entire NFL offseason with a surprise, I think, at number one, but we'll get to that. But first, we wanted to hit some of the more recent news and just sort of give you some thoughts on what's going on in the league over the last few days. The first is Christian Watson and his four-year, $92 million extension. I have a feeling that the numbers and Mike are going to disagree a little bit about this one. Watson always comes out really good in advanced stats. Last year, he was second or first in DVOA, depending on whether you include a defensive pass interference. Some of the numbers we put out there didn't include the defensive pass interference, which has him first. If you do include defensive pass interference, Alec Pierce becomes first and Watson becomes second. Mm-hmm. But still, really good season, right? The problem is, how much do you trust him to be there for 17 games in any given year?
It was a really good half season. He led the league in DVOA, a percentage stat on a small sample. So it's not so much I disagree with what he's capable of, but I think we're in the same boat in terms of what's his availability. And one thing about this is the incredible shrinking contract, because you set it as a $92 million contract. It was originally called a $116 million contract. That's how it was originally reported. And when you look at it, only the $31 million bonus is guaranteed, although things like his 2026 salary and roster bonus are also guaranteed. So I don't disagree with a 2-year 30-something million dollar contract. The $116 million, I think you'd agree, would have been a little high for somebody with productivity.
I mean, they're depending on him a lot this year, right? They no more Romeo Doubs, no more Dontayvion Wicks.
Right.
It's clear the top two guys are him and Matthew Golden with Jaden Reed in the slot. That's how they're going. They're hoping people don't get hurt, right. Which you can hope all you want, but that's the problem is that you can't count on that. So he's really good, and he stretches the field, and he's important to what they do. But I guess I was just a little bit surprised at the size, but it's not as big as it was originally announced.
That's right. As it shrinks, it's like, okay, this makes sense. That's your vertical guy. They extended Reed earlier. That's your slot guy. They're working on Tucker Kraft, their tight end, who does a lot of the possession work in that offense. So, people know I've been a skeptic, a critic of the Packers offseason. All of this is fine, but you hit the caveat. All of this is fine if no one, and I mean no one, gets hurt.
Yeah. The other big move that I think probably really surprised people is Darnell Washington's four-year, $42 million extension that makes him the 12th highest paid tight end for a guy who catches almost no passes. And it just goes to show how much the league is moving to, as the kids say, that meta of 13 personnel and putting so much stock in the blocking tight ends now compared to what we used to do.
It's strange because I don't think this 13 personnel revolution has legs. I think there's going to be a lot of teams that experiment with it and discover they're not the Rams.
Yeah.
One of those teams probably won't be the Steelers, because it's almost like with Washington, they're extending a tight end / right tackle. This is all about keeping Aaron Rodgers alive.
Right. He's the big guy, for those who don't know, who's like over 300 pounds. He is a offensive lineman.
He's an offensive lineman who can catch and can break tackles. He's unique. I see him, by the way, listed now as their starter and Pat Freiermuth as their number two. I think that's unusual. Robert Tonyan's there. We all know he has a relationship with Rodgers. That will complicate things. But that's a team I can see doing 13 personnel and committing to it, because it makes sense with what Rodgers wants to do and with the personnel they have.
And then the other wide receiver big contract was Drake London, 4 years, $141 million, much more than what Watson got. Now, it's interesting. You know, I do two different versions of receiving DVOA.
Okay.
The regular old school version that goes all the way back to 77 is based on targets.
Right.
London was 26th in that. The new school version that I only have for the last 3 or 4 years is based on routes, because there is value in drawing targets, even if you don't catch them.
Yes.
And he's fifth in the league in that. And it goes to show how much he is such a huge part of the Falcons offense. So I don't really disagree with this one. If you said to me, he's one of the top 10 wide receivers in the league, I would say, yeah, that's probably true. And if you're one of the top 10 wide receivers and your contract comes up, you get the really big deal.
And I went back last week at the two deep zone and I looked at some of London's games against big opponents. For example, last year against the Patriots, he had a 3-touchdown game. Going against Gonzalez and Carlton Davis, against the Bills, he had a big game. London has always been there in those rare big games the Falcons are in. London does the job. The problem with the Falcons is usually the rest of the Falcons not coming through in those. So it's like $100 billion guaranteed. That's a lot. I don't disagree with that. Well, talk to me when Bijan and Kyle Pitts and some of these other guys, if they keep extending these guys, then I might have some questions. But I think Drake London has proved he's the guy there.
Yeah, I mean, their problem is not the wide receiver. The problem is the quarterback.
Yes.
I mean, who's throwing him the ball? And, I mean, how much is his deep threatness going to value if Tua Tagovailoa is the quarterback and he's not in the Mike McDaniel offense that is protecting him long enough to actually get the ball down the field, let it hang up there for a little bit, and then the wide receiver moves under it?
One thing I saw over the last couple of years with Penix and with injured Cousins and with Desmond Ridder is London can come back for the ball. He's pretty good at that. So maybe that's going to be the saving grace.
I didn't write this in our notes, but we should say something about the Patrick Mahomes extension.
Okay.
That came down last night. Hey, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league still. He deserves a really big extension. Like, to me, it's not really that much news. Like, he's going to make a ton of money. I don't have the exact number in front of me, unfortunately. But he's worth it, right? No one disagrees with that.
Someone out there is trying to do, like, a Mahomes makes too much money take. Bless you. Go nuts with that. No, this obviously makes sense.
Yes, thank you to our new producer, Laquan Jones, for having the actual contract value for Patrick Mahomes over $500 million. But again, like, if you're going to pay anyone, it's a quarterback. And if you're going to pay any quarterback, it's the best quarterback.
Right, right. It's a common sense move. I haven't looked at how it's structured or anything like that. I'm guessing it's actually reasonable now, and a lot of that $504 million is in 2030 or some far-flung future.
You can fault Brent Veach for some of the draft picks that Kansas City has made in recent years, but I feel like he has always been very good at cap manipulation.
As good as you can be when you've been a champion contender for 6 or 7 years and have a quarterback one like this and have a Hall of Fame tight end. You have to make some moves, and we're going to talk about some of the moves they were forced to make, but I think they have done an outstanding job.
What do you think of the Brandon Ayuk story? That's the other story that's not contract related per se. He attacked the 49ers on Instagram twice this week. Everyone feels like he wants to get to Washington. He has a previous relationship with Jaden Daniels.
Yes.
The 49ers want to get something for him.
Yes.
He wants to just go. They could put him on different lists and mess around with him on the do not report list and all this, or he could report.
Right.
And he could pass a physical, and then they're forced to have him.
Right. It's weird that he hasn't tried that one. My theory is that he doesn't want to play anymore, but he doesn't want to say that he doesn't want to play anymore.
I mean, he says he's releasing a rap album about how angry he is at the 49ers. Just show up and make them pay you.
He's releasing a rap album. I think we have the core of the issue now. This is not trying to extend his football career. This is trying to start his hip hop career by being this conscientious objector and this bad boy and whatever else he's trying to be.
If I were the 49ers, I would just give up on the idea of getting something for him and just cut him.
You know what? Yeah, because you aren't going to get
a seventh round pick. Really? Like, that's you? You're holding out for a Washington seventh round pick? Really? Just wash your hands of this.
Wash your hands of this and then call his bluff and see if he winds up on the Commanders roster. Because we've heard from nobody at the higher up. So Adam Peters is familiar with him from his San Francisco days. I don't know if that team is that excited, and I don't know if he shows up there, how excited he is to play. He's really acting like the kid on the schoolyard who doesn't want to fight, but wants to look like he wants to fight. So he gets behind the teacher and is like, he's holding me back. He's holding me back. That's what Iyuk looks like right now. It looks very false. It looks very contrived.
And a reminder, by the way, if you watch us live, which we do, the new time is noon Thursdays in the preseason and then Mondays and Thursdays during the season. You can ask questions or make comments and we'll respond to them. Let's get to our top 10 off-season moves. So we went through all the trades and all the signings. Mm-hmm. And we tried to rank them based on the most important. We are going to start at number 10. Number 10, we have the Kenneth Walker signing with the Chiefs. 3 years, but really two with a team option.
Right.
$43 million, 29 guaranteed. He is now sixth among running backs in average per year.
Right, and the graphic that Laquan has put below us is pretty much the bottom line here: explosive runs and
the ability. Yeah, the Chiefs had like none of them. The Chiefs were 30th in second level yards per carry and 32nd in open field yards per carry last year.
Right, and then you bring in Walker. I think we might be a little low on this in terms of its ranking in the top 10.
Yeah, you think this might be more important because it might. Listen, as an analytics guy, my first feeling is running back signings aren't really that important. For example, in the projection system for FTN Football Almanac, running backs do not move the needle at all.
Okay.
Running back signings don't matter at all. But I think this one is special because they were so bad at the explosives last year.
Right.
But I still would only put it 10th compared to some of the other moves we're going to talk about.
Right. Like FTN had the Chiefs at like 1.8 yards after contact per play, which was like 29th or 30th in the NFL. And Walker was at 2.3 by himself, and he was taking a lot of hits up the middle. He wasn't behind the best line for a lot of the season as well. So when you take that and add it up, and you do it for a team like the Chiefs, this isn't some bad team trying to like take the next level. This is a perennial contender filling a weakness. That's where I think this might be more impactful than your usual It's all fluff. It's all fantasy running back.
Right. This is not like, Arizona added Jeremiah Love to the 900 other things they needed. This is a team that is a contender, and this is what they needed.
Right. Oh, and by the way, since you mentioned the Cardinals, the Chiefs also added Amari DeMarcado from the Cardinals, who every once in a while just gets a 60-yard run. Like, if you look at his stat rate, it's like gain of two, gain of one, gain of one, gain of two, gain of 60. It just happens once in a while. Talk about somebody to have on your bench behind Patrick Mahomes with all these weapons. Somebody could go out there and maybe three times a year blow up a game. It was just a sneaky little move that they got to get to their backup running back to add somebody who has some depth.
At number nine, we put the Malik Willis signing. 3 years, $67.5 million with $45 million guaranteed. He is now 18th among quarterbacks in average per year. And I feel like this would be more important if Miami was contending.
Right.
It's important because it's the one biggest quarterback to change teams, probably a little bit more than Kyler Murray going to Minnesota because there's so much promise there with the youth and that they might actually be able to build a team around him. The problem is by the time they build a team around him, it's going to be 2028.
Right. And I think this one felt more impactful before they got rid of Jalen Waddle, because you could have seen a scenario where the Dolphins were more competitive with Waddle back there. Now you are looking at this. I know they hate the word rebuild. Everyone hates the word rebuild. Haefele was talking about how he hates rebuilding and things like that. It's what they're doing. And Willis is kind of on a trial and a trial under fire with so few weapons to work with.
And they're not done. I mean, getting rid of players. Jordan Brooks is in his last year, was AP first team all pro last year at linebacker. Easy player to trade.
Yeah. They signed the center, though. The center's good.
Brewer. Yes, but the center, that is a player who I think they look at and they go, when we're ready to compete again, this is our guy.
This is our guy. So they got him. They re-signed Achan, which is fine because somebody's got to be there, and he provides explosives ideally. But this is a chance to see what Willis can do. That's a modest contract. It's a modest investment, and we're going to see if it works out.
His wide receivers, Tutu Atwell, Jalen Tolbert, Malik Washington, and rookies Caleb Douglas, and Chris Bell may not be ready until midseason because he's coming off the ACL injury. And people feel like he has a lot of promise.
Yes.
For the future, I was very happy. I snagged him in the FTN Staff Dynasty League with the last pick of the first round.
Wow.
But that is a future play. He's not going to play much this year.
Right. That was a jump scare. When those receivers' names came on the bottom of the screen there, that was a jump scare. Seeing the name Tutu Atwell as like a wide receiver one, that's remarkable.
He is kind of wide receiver one, isn't he?
Well, I guess Malik Washington.
Jalen Tolbert maybe is what? That's just really hard to figure out.
It's hard to figure. There is no wide receiver one. It's the friends we made along the way.
Speaking of wide receiver ones, number eight on our count up of the top moves of the offseason was the DJ Moore trade. DJ Moore going from Chicago to Buffalo along with a fifth round pick for a second round pick. Now, here is the thing. I don't know if this is going to be as good for Buffalo as they think it is. And I say that even though I think Buffalo should be favored to win the division this year.
Interesting.
Because I think they'll regress. They'll get a little bit better. The Patriots will regress backwards a little bit. I think it makes sense to have Buffalo favored to win the division. DJ Moore was 54th in DVOA last year with Caleb Williams playing well.
Right.
So you can't blame that on the quarterback. And in the root DVOA, he was 62nd and 69th over the last 2 years.
That's right.
Maybe he's not as good as he used to be.
Well, his stats are in like a three-year decline. His raw stats have been going down every year for several years. So have his things like yards after the catch per catch. Those have been going down over, I think, the last three seasons. And I know at the end of the season he was playing well. He had a bunch of touchdowns. It seems like the better Caleb Williams and the rookies got, the less we heard and saw of DJ Moore. And that Bears team in the middle, like completing a rebuild, was awfully happy to let a guy go that had been like their featured receiver a couple of years ago.
I mean, this should be the strong boundary receiver that Josh Allen needs. They always wanted Keon Coleman to be that he never was.
Right.
But he has to be that guy, and I don't know if he can still quite be that good anymore.
So much of his production was over the middle last year. And, of course, he's going into the all-mesh passing game. So we'll see what happens with that. A lot of the talk out of Buffalo camp in OTAs has been, you guessed it, Keon Coleman. We're starting that again.
Oh, yeah, the train on the tracks.
The train's on the track, yes.
Number seven, I put the Jalen Phillips signing.
Okay.
4 years, $120 million. $80 million guaranteed. He is now ninth among edges in APY. He absolutely had an instant impact on the Eagles' defense at the trade deadline last year, even though he only had 5 sacks for the whole year, and I believe he only had 2 with the Eagles. But he's very good against the run. He had a high pass rush win rate. However, he doesn't feel like a guy who should be in the top 10 edge rushers as far as average per year.
True. And after we put this list together and I was looking at it and it was too late to email everyone, this made it and Jonathan Greenard didn't?
Greenard only had like 2 sacks last year, though.
He had 2, but he had 12 the year before that. I think he had 3 last year. He was injured last year for a portion of it. Phillips, it is beyond the sack rate. Just from the Eagles standpoint alone, when he went to a team that quasi gave a damn after leaving the Dolphins. 8 pressures in the Packers win. That was a big impact in the Packers win, which was a close game. 9 pressures against the Bills, which was a big deal, and a 13-12, 14-13. I forget the exact score of that game. That was a big deal. He had 9 against the Chargers. Of course, the Chargers' offensive line was borked, but that was a close loss for the Eagles. Phillips came up. That's what he potentially brings, is that ability in big games to be that guy, that pressure bringer. But you're right. The money and the fact that there's like no – I'm not sure what's on the other side in Carolina. I know there's some young players there, but
I think it's Nick Skirton or Prince Umanmalin, whose name I can never pronounce. Skirton is the starter and Umanmalin is the backup.
Yes, I'm never going to be able to pronounce that either. It sounds like an old Pink Floyd album to me. But yeah, I know Skirton played pretty well. Yeah, and they've got Derek Brown there. They've got a guy who's not necessarily an edge, but I don't think it all adds up to a difference maker for the Panthers that's going to get them past Pantherdom, you know what I'm saying?
Past which 9 still may win the division.
And they win the division, yeah. So,
number 6, we put the Trey Hendrickson signing. 4 years, $112 million with $60 million guaranteed. So less than Phillips. He's 13th among edges in average per year. Obviously, he's older. He's not good against the run.
Right.
But the Ravens definitely needed an edge. Especially after the Max Crosby thing fell through. I mean, I think they rather would have had Crosby.
Remember when we thought Max Crosby was going to be on the Ravens for like 36 hours?
That was a fun day. Yeah, that was a good day. The Hendrickson is a big, that's a big get for them.
Yes. Yes. And his, I don't have his pass rush win rate numbers. I think they were spectacular last time he took the field, the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think they've been good the last couple of years. Very good.
Right. And he's that winner. The Ravens, with their pass rush, they've always had guys. They've had bigger dudes. They've had guys that worked well within system fits for Mike McDonald and other guys in the past. They never had that, like, they haven't had that winner who just goes out there and just beats the tackle and gets the quarterback consistently. I think you have to go back to Terrell Suggs. You have to go back to guys like that who do that. And that's what Hendrickson brings to the table. If they can build some other pieces around him, that's going to be a problem for their opponents.
So Hendrickson was our top signing.
Okay.
That means our top five moves are all trades.
Woo!
Let's start number five, the Jaylen Waddle trade. Waddle for a first and a third, plus a swap of fourth rounders.
Yes.
Last year, Waddle was 19th in regular DVOA and 12th in root DVOA. It's a huge addition for the Denver offense. With the asterisk of, you know, can Nix get him the ball all the way downfield as well as they want him to? Nix is very, he's very average. Like, he's not bad.
Yeah.
But he's not really good. He's just, he's there.
Who was throwing to Waddle last year and the year before that?
Well, that's the thing, right? Yeah.
Right. Nix can get the ball there sometimes.
Better than Tua, probably, yes.
Yes, yes. And that's a I think this could have been first or second. Not, well, it could have been first, but it could have been second or third on the list because of, again, like the instant impact of going from no wide receiver one except Cortland Sutton, who's been there since the days of, I don't know, John Elway. To having a real number one there and having Sutton go down to number two. And if you take all those guys and move them down in the expectation level and who's covering them, I think it does change the dynamic of the Broncos offense a lot.
Yeah, Waddle is, I think, definitely the number one. Now, that reminds me of something I was going to ask you a couple of picks ago.
Yes.
I have to figure out for the defending wide receiver one and wide receiver two, who do you think is wide receiver one in Chicago now, Luther Burden or Roma Dunze? If you were an opposing defensive coordinator and you had Pat Surtain,
mm-hmm.
which one would you have him cover, Odunze or Burden?
All right. So my theory on this is it defaults to the deep threat, and the deep threat would be Odunze in that case because Burden is the yakky guy, the big, angry, ornery, yakky guy. And that's where I would probably put the – because that's how these coordinators think, who's going to beat me deep. So that's how I would do that. I guess in this case, it's Waddle, even though I think of Cortland Sutton as a vertical threat. You go with the younger.
Waddle is more of the vertical threat, I think.
Absolutely. Right. A younger, more dynamic version of that vertical threat.
Obviously, you wouldn't cover it with Patrick Surtain, except in practice. But if I had Christian Gonzalez, I would put it.
Christian Gonzalez, he would cover. What are you going to do about Miami?
I don't know. Tolbert, I guess.
I guess it's
Atwell's the deep threat.
Atwell's the deep threat. Maybe you have to wait and then week one and look at outlooks and then go from there based on target share, I guess.
Number four, the Dexter Lawrence trade. Big Sexy to Cincinnati for the number 10 overall pick, which became Francis Maunoa.
Yes.
And I think, you know, a good trade for the Bengals. Obviously, they need to add defense. You'll hear of this a lot when we get to the preseason, when you get the FTN Almanac. You'll hear a lot about the Bengals. Their second half improvement on defense was really significant, but okay. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be better on defense this year. Second half improvement doesn't roll into the next year the way you think it would from common sense. Right. But adding a player like Dexter Lawrence sure helps.
You had Dexter Lawrence. You also had Boye Mafe. You also had Jonathan Allen with the asterisk that's more of a name right now than a player in terms of what he has left.
Yeah, and Lawrence did have career lows in stats last year, but I think he still got a lot of talent, and I think that's still a big upgrade for them.
That's a big upgrade. And if you're going to fix your entire front four, they brought in Cassius Howe, second-round pick, a really good edge rusher as well. If you can fix that, that can solve a lot of the problems on your back end. What about the Bengals' projection? Can you give us a teaser here? What are we looking at?
I mean, the Bengals' projection overall is very good because their offensive projection is very good. I think we have them projected to win the division.
Interesting. Interesting. And Lawrence can be a part of that.
A.J. Brown trade, number three.
Bye, A.J. Trenchtown,
here we have a watcher. Trenchtown 2 says about Dexter Lawrence, he eats a lot of double teams, but a 10th overall pick for a guy with career lows in tackles and sacks who is unhappy with his contract is a lot. And as far as I know, they have not yet torn up his contract and done a new one.
Oh, you know, the Bengals get on top of that really quickly. They've never had an issue with that. My concern with Lawrence in New York is how eager he was to leave when the sheriff came to town, if you know what I'm saying. Harbaugh shows up, and there's a lot of talk about cleaning house and everything. And the first guy to raise his hand to be like, yeah, I was kind of comfortable with the way things were, was Dexter Lawrence. And money couldn't appease him, like, initially.
When the day comes for Cincinnati to change their head coach, doesn't it feel like they'll go with one of those hard-ass head coaches and we'll hear about how they're doing things all different now? Because it seems like a cycle, right? You go from your hard-ass head coach to your player's head coach to your hard-ass head coach to your player's head coach. Back and forth, right?
Right. Well, and the thing is, it would make sense because, I mean, most hard-asses, like take a guy like Flores. You bring Flores in and you're worried about him yelling at the quarterback. Well, he ain't going to yell at Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
So you can bring your hard ass in and then you can have your dipsy doodle 19th century poet Mike McDaniel guy out there running the offense and keeping those guys happy while he takes care of the other end of things. And that would make sense for the Bengals. That said, they've got to actually fire the coach first, and they've been very reluctant to do that.
So, yeah, the number three trade, A.J. Brown, your team and my team. A.J. Brown for a 2028 first and a 2027 fifth. Last year, A.J. Brown was 31st in regular DVOA, 19th in root DVOA.
Right.
The year before, he was third and second. And obviously, there were major problems in that offense last year with him and Hurts being on the same page. So I feel like, despite the fact that he's a little older, he's not that much older. He's only like 28.
No.
He's a lot closer to that guy with the third and the second than the guy with the 31st and the 19th.
Yeah. Good luck. You've got a year with this guy. You have a year before he finds something, a grievance that's going to stick in his craw, I think. So
We've got two. Then he sours, and Drake May gets a big extension, and they have to start cutting guys. And so we got two.
You got two, he could sour at any time. You got to remember, like, don't think he's motivated by a ring, because he got a ring, and the following September, he was quoting Bible verses.
I also think it's hilarious that he talks about how he grew up as a Patriots fan. I don't think that matters at all.
No, none of that is there. His previous relationship with Vrabel, I think, does matter. That whatever happened at the end there was all financial, was business oriented. What was happening in Philly was not financial.
Yes, he is absolutely a go-to guy for Drake May. Fifth highest first read target rate on third downs in 2025, according to FTN stats.
And that's what he did best. What him and Hurts did best is, if I'm isolated, single coverage, and I'm A.J. Brown, get me the ball. Let me go in. He wants that. It works well. It's going to work very well with Drake May throwing him the ball. It's going to work very well with Romeo Doubs on the other side, just causing a little bit of an extra headache if you know, if you roll all your coverage to AJ, you have other solutions.
And as good as Stephon Diggs was last year, he was not as good as AJ Brown can be. This is definitely an upgrade.
It's a different kind of guy at this point in their careers, too, in terms of Diggs being a possession-y guy, like at that point in his career, where he was getting open underneath with his quickness, whereas Brown is more of a boundary guy. I really wish you had kept them both, because I would have loved to hear how that went. I would have loved the drama.
Yeah. Well, it would have been something for us to write and talk about.
Like the Teocho show. It would be like the Ocho Cinco and Terrell Owens all over again.
Yeah.
Right. Beware.
The number two and number one, we went with the Rams.
Yes.
This is interesting. Here's what we've decided to do. Miles Garrett trade two.
Yes.
Trent McDuffie trade one.
Right.
Mike, you wrote the Rams chapter. Tell us, why do you feel the Trent McDuffie trade is actually more important than the Miles Garrett trade?
In the Miles Garrett trade, the Rams went from a very good to excellent young player in Jared Verse to one of the greatest defenders of our times in Miles Garrett. So they went from a B-plus to an A-plus or an A++. The Trent McDuffie trade, they went from Kobe Durant
or Akella Witherspoon, I guess.
Manuel Forbes, all of these guys who were bad, who were either bad or very inconsistent. Durant would kind of run hot and cold. Manuel Forbes is a bad football player. They went from C minuses to A's. And so when you look at the gulf and the gap, and I think you have to, you had to run the projections. I think the projections say the same thing. One made this leap, and then the other one was like, the steel sharpened the steel.
Yes, the Rams did not. The Rams moved from being about 0.7 wins, average wins behind the Seahawks, to about 0.2 average wins behind the Seahawks with the Garrett trade.
Right.
Now, if Donald comes back, they become the Super Bowl favorites.
Yes. And right off the bat, you look at this, and like, how do the Rams have number two and number one on the list? How?
Yeah, I mean, they went for it this year, right? So Garrett for Verse and three picks, including a 2027 first.
Yes.
And then Trent McDuffie for a first this year, which became, I believe, Peter Woods?
What was?
The defensive tackle for Kansas City?
Yes, yes, I think so.
And then two other picks and a 2027 third. And then they gave him a huge extension that makes him the number one cornerback at $31 million average per year. So the Rams are going for it. Like, really, this is the year. And it makes, I mean, it makes, you know, we keep talking about it. It makes the Ty Simpson pick look really strange.
Yes.
Because the Rams are going for it, going for it. What happens if Puka Nacua or Devontae Adams get hurt and they could have had Mekhi Lemon or offensive tackle gets arrested for domestic violence and they could have drafted an offensive tackle.
Right.
But sorry, Mansoor Delane was the sixth pick. The pick with the Rams pick was Peter Woods.
Right. It was confusing my brain because the Chiefs picking early and getting Delane confused my brain.
Right. That was Mansoor Delane was their own pick. I mean, traded up with Cleveland. And then Peter Woods was the pick that had been the Rams pick.
Right. It's a topsy-turvy world. But yeah, Woods is a good ball player. But yeah, the Rams now have, and I don't even want to think about Aaron Donald.
No, I mean, first of all, Garrett right now, considering how much teams ran the ball against the Browns because they were winning last year, and now teams will be losing to the Rams, so more pass rushes for Garrett.
Yes.
If you all of a sudden put Donald next to him, Garrett had an NFL-high 161 quarterback pressures over the last two seasons.
Wow.
I mean, I think Garrett is in the, like, you know, greatest edge rushers ever conversation.
Yeah, the guy
really is that good.
Yeah, and I went back and rewatched some Garrett because I hadn't watched any Garrett in the offseason because he's over there on the Browns. You see him on the highlight film. Just the moves. Like, we can, like, talk about dazzling moves, but these, like, NBA-style moves that he uses to get past and just absolute dust the tackles, they're still there. This long into his career, he's still doing these things like he's the best athlete on the field mixed with, like, one of the most experienced athletes on the field. And it's just wins. It's just pure wins. And you put that on one side, and you put Kobe Turner.
Right, and then Byron Young.
And Byron Young on the other side. You can't just double-team Garrett. You can't roll things towards Garrett, or you can try. You'll get obliterated. Fisky, all these other guys. And then on the back end, you're going to have to wait for guys to get open because not only did they bring in McDuffie, but Jalen Watson's a pretty good cornerback, too, to have imported along the way. And it's just facing the Rams is going to be unbelievably challenging.
I think Garrett makes the Rams more fun to watch, but McDuffie helps them win a little bit more just because of Verse, because they had to get rid of Verse in the Garrett trade. And good on Cleveland to get Verse back in that trade.
Right, and we feel sorry for you, Jeff Verse. It sounds like he's not having a good time there. But, yeah, the moves complement each other.
Yes, at least he got his number.
Yes, that's a good point.
And the loser is Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa, who will never come back. And so his number was given to Dylan Gabriel.
Right, the permanently injured guy. Like, we couldn't have solved that problem the moment we made the trade. Oh, well, it's done now. Mm-hmm.
All right, that does it for today's special edition of the Shots at Tenier NFL podcast. Hopefully folks enjoyed. Thank you, everybody who has listened. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Don't forget, as we always say, to like the show on your favorite podcast app. Leave comments. Tell people about the show. We will be back in July with new episodes, doing division by division previews and going through the FTN Football Almanac. The Almanac is going live on July 8th and is available for pre-order right now. You get $5 off right now if you go to, I believe, ftnfantasy.com/almanac. It is a very easy URL. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you to our new producer, Laquan. Appreciate it, man. And we'll be back in July. Thank you so much, folks. That's it. We're out of here.